Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
So the Lakers' playoff run is over, and now the long offseason awaits. But that doesn't mean that your NBA playoff fun has to end, thanks to the Autograph app. On the Autograph app, all of your favorite sports content, sports articles, videos, podcasts, including yours truly, can be found in one place. And the more you read, listen, like, comment, and engage with this content, like you normally do, the more fans coins you'll earn, which you can then parlay into some pretty sweet sports prizes like $24 playoff tickets or $2 signed jerseys. Also, throughout the NBA playoffs, Autograph will continue to drop awesome rewards for fans, including 25% off Lakers merchandise. So all you need to do is download the Autograph app, check the description box of this episode, click the link, use the code LITLEGACY, sign up, create an account, and start fandoming away. Make sure to check the rewards tab to see all of the cool rewards Autograph will continue to drop throughout the NBA playoffs this year. Get rewarded for your fandom today on Autograph. All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where from coach pockets to coach podcast, the Lakers coaching carousel is always a circus.
Damn, that's pretty good, dude. I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to talk yet, but that was hilarious.
Thank you. So mind the game, mind the gossip, and wake us up when the Lakers official head coaching hire is announced, because we are here today to talk about some bigger things in the meantime. And by bigger things, I'm talking about the bigs in the 2024 NBA draft. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. Tommy, we're here today to talk about the 2024 NBA draft for some reason, even though the Lakers may shop that pick very heavily. But give me your 30 seconds to a minute updated temperature check on the Lakers head coaching search, whichever way you want to go with it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I probably feel the way that many people feel. It seems like things are going, you know, pointing towards J.J. Redick. That seems silly to me. There seems like, I will say this, it seems like there should be like a very qualified assistant out there, particularly like on one of the teams, you know, that has been very successful in the West the last couple of years, that might be ready to make a jump. The thing I'll say about that is, like, look, nothing is without risk. Everybody thought Darvin Ham was ready to make the jump too. I mean, we were all really excited with that hire, right? Especially like coming off of like the Bucks relatively recently winning a championship. So, you know, nothing does carry is without risk. I just think that like this whole notion that like the front office thinks that they can just say like, J.J. Redick is like millennial Pat Riley, and you know, he's like this handsome guy who's like really smart, and like we're all just supposed to be like, cool, I saw Winning Time, I get that, like, ref. Like, it kind of like highlights the broader problems I have with like the way that the organization is being run from the top down. But On the other hand, I think that, like, if there is a time to do this kind of thing and take a shot in the dark at somebody like JJ, it's right now because, you know, again, there are maybe assistants who are on the rise who might be, you know, good options too. Those people have risk. All of the former head coaches are uninspiring. I'll throw Mike Budenholzer into that list. Like, not really, it wouldn't have been a super inspiring hire for me. And I don't think it was realistic for him to come replace like his guy anyway. But, you know, I think this is the year to take a shot, but it's just like the whole process has been like a little bit off-putting in my mind.
That's kind of what you get when you have the Lakers doing another head coaching hire. And yeah, the more I think about it, the more ludicrous it sounds that the more ludicrous it seems like that, you know, we're about to hire LeBron's podcast partner. But at the end of the day, I am not confident about anything the Lakers do when it comes to head coaching hires, even if they hire the most accomplished assistant coach, right, AKA Mike Anori, like you mentioned, because they may just set that person up to fail. And it may not even be their fault. It may just be the context of what it means to be a Los Angeles Lakers head coach, you know, and everything that comes with that, all of the baggage that comes with that. JJ Redick could very easily be a good head coach. We have no idea. Personality-wise, yeah. I don't like how douchebaggy and cocky he's always been. That's always been my thing with JJ Redick. He can kind of come off like a prick. But who knows? Maybe that's the kind of personality you need with some of these NBA players, and maybe that's what keeps them in check. I have no idea. Like I've said before, wake us up when the official coaching hire is made, and then we shall go from there. Mike Anori, I'm kind of in on. He seems funny, smart, doesn't seem like he takes himself too seriously. From a basketball sense, he really helped D'Angelo Russell have his best defensive stretches of his career and really seems to know how to contextualize his players well. So if you're thinking about D'Angelo Russell at all, he would help maybe bring D'Angelo Russell back and actually might do a good job utilizing him. But yeah, with that said, again, we'll leave the head coaching stuff right there. And today we shall start diving into some 2024 NBA draft stuff. And we shall specifically be going over some of the top big men in this year's draft. Before we get into the big men, though, let's talk some draft logistics and the Lakers roster landscape first. So the Lakers have the number 17th pick, maybe, but most likely. The Pelicans have until pretty much next week to finalize whether or not they're going to defer that pick to 2025 or take the number 17th pick. If they take the number 17th pick, then the Lakers would have the 2025 first to trade, which in my opinion is a better trade asset anyways. For now, let's say the Lakers have the 17th pick in this year's draft and the number 55th pick. If the Lakers bring back D'Angelo Russell and let's say they re-sign Max Christie, and if Cam Reddish and Jaxson Hayes exercise their player options, the Lakers will already be at 13 roster spots. If they bring in two additional rookies on standard deals, the number 17th pick and the number 55th pick, along with JHS and Maxwell Lewis, who they already have on their roster, then they'll be at max capacity and can't even sign a veteran minimum or taxpayer mid-level player. Tommy, is there any way, in your opinion, that the Lakers draft two additional players and place them on standard contracts entering next year?
No, zero chance.
Yeah, zero chance. So the things that they can do is...
zero chance unless they trade JHS and Maxwell Lewis. I mean, we're not having more than two projects, I guess is my point.
Correct. That's exactly where I was going with this. What they can do is if they draft someone at number 17, then the number 55th pick is likely just gone or given to somebody else, and or JHS is traded as well, maybe along with the 55th pick to, I don't know, rise up in the second round in the early 40s to draft Bronny, you know, something like that. So your initial sentiment is correct. The Lakers are not going to have four of these rookie/sophomores in their roster, and they will likely find a way to consolidate some of these picks and players. Let's see. Really quickly, let's talk about Bronny James before we get into the big men. Are you okay with the Lakers? Let's say they trade their number 17th pick for like an upgrade at the starter position, and they find a way to use JHS and the number 55th pick to move into the 30s. And let's say they draft Bronny James. Are you okay with the Lakers doing that? Would you consider it a waste? From everything I've seen from his draft combine stuff and his pro day, I mean, the best things I can say about Bronny James is he already has a really nice NBA-ready body and physique, looks super strong, and this is him as a 19-year-old, and that body is only going to continue to develop. On top of that, in the draft combine measurements, he had one of the top max vertical jumps, which is unsurprising because LeBron James is his father, but he has like a 40-inch vertical. His calling card right now is defense, but he also showed off a really nice three-point shooting stroke at the combine, albeit it's a little bit slow. But he's proven that he can shoot a little bit. He's proven he can handle the rock and make some nice playmaking reads. But his foundation is built on defense, so I kind of like my slightly shorter Lou Dort, who can pass and handle the rock comp. But yeah, your quick thoughts on the Lakers maybe drafting Bronny James in the second round and that being their only pick this year.
I think that hard thing about Bronny is like it's so hard to find a unbiased take on him, and even the like people who are alleging to be unbiased or biased, right? It's like the reality is we have high school tape on him. The college tape on him is largely irrelevant, in my opinion. I mean, frankly, like USC was horrible this year. Bronny literally had a heart attack before the like season started. Like, so he shows up mid-season on a team that's horrible. Like, it's unremarkable. I think, like, a lot of players on that team, by the way, suffered. Like, Isaiah Collier is a very, very good player who was, like, a top three high school recruit and is, like, you know, mocked. I mean, some people have him really high, but, like, the mocks I've seen, he's, like, late lottery. So, like, you know, a lot of people, like, suffered as a result of how bad USC was this year. But, and I think Bronny's one of those. And I think, like, look, just looking at the numbers, everyone, because everyone's got a take, because his dad's LeBron, but okay, so he's 6'1.5" without shoes. That's 6'3" NBA. Let's just like, we don't need to call this kid 6'1". He's 6'3" NBA. Every NBA player like reports their height with shoes. To keep it standard, he's 6'3" NBA. He has nearly a 6'8" wingspan. He has a 40-inch vertical. He's a decent shooter. And he could be like a lockdown defender. I mean, certainly right now he hangs his hat on defense, right? Because he's so athletic. He's got good length and he seems engaged. And like the guys that he compares himself to, he's not like, I'm like Chris Paul. He's like, no, I want to be like Derek White and like people like that. Right. So his mind also seems to be in the right place. I think he's going to come into the league with a chip on his shoulder. And I would be totally fine swapping him as like a project player with somebody like JHS who like, you know, look, JHS, like.
Just stop.
Yeah. It's like hard with JHS. Right. But like maybe he has long term, like maybe higher potential upside. But JHS carries a lot of risk. He's a guaranteed contract. He got back surgery as like an 19, 20 year old, you know, like. There's a lot of potential issues there. And I know people are going to like crucify us and like call us LeBron stans and like whatever. It's not that I don't care. I hope Bronny has a successful career, but I'm not saying any of this because I'm a LeBron stan. I just like if we're going to have a project point guard on the roster, I'd rather have like a defense, like a kid who's like a defensive guy who has the right pedigree, who like there's no question about like, is he going to work? Right. And so, you know, work hard, I should say. And so like, I would, you know, on a second round player, like very low paid contract, I don't know. I'm kind of taking that over JHS at this point, which I realize may sound ridiculous to some, but.
Yeah, I don't think that's ridiculous at all. I think Bronny James is already a better point guard than JHS. He has a better assist to turnover ratio in college.
That's crazy.
anyways. Yeah. So I pretty much agree with everything you said at this point, just to keep things. Just to maintain the peace and add a little bit more incentive towards LeBron James re-signing with the Lakers, draft him his son, and let's ride off into the sunset. And obviously, for all the things that we mentioned, Bronny James may end up just being a very solid NBA player. Nepotism is playing a lot into this pick for sure, but it's not like he isn't without his actual, you know, positive attributes. So we'll leave it at Bronny James there. Let's act as if the Lakers are going to pick somebody with their number 17th pick. For obvious reasons and what we're seeing in the playoffs right now, we are going to focus on the big men in this year's draft. I guess before we get into specific names, Tommy, really quickly, where do you stand on the Lakers trading the pick? It's obvious that they're going to try heavily to trade that pick, but there is a counter argument, devil's advocate side to that. where I kind of question how valuable this pick is anyways. And if the Lakers do decide to just select someone with this pick, I actually don't think it's going to, I don't think it's going to affect their best trade package for a superstar or even two marginal guys, because what people really want this offseason is the 2029 first and the 2030 first. If anything, the 2024 number 17th pick, if you add it into a bigger package, to me, it only looks good for optics, and I don't know if another team actually cares about that pick. So the Lakers may actually find more value just selecting someone, especially if it's at a position of need like the center position. And we have seen this playoffs, and it's so sad to talk about these guys in light of JHS, because outside of Derek Lively, who is performing amazingly well with the Dallas Mavericks, guys like rookies like Jaime Jaquez, Ben Shepherd, they have proven to be key rotation pieces throughout the playoffs and have proven that if you draft correctly and keep into account team fit, I know you always talk about BPA or whatever, but with the, in the Lakers context, you also need to take into account fit. It's been proven that, yeah, you can have day one contributors who not only perform in the regular season, but also in the playoffs. And so if the Lakers select a big, and obviously Derek Lively is more of the exception than he is the rule, but yeah, if you had your druthers, Tommy, would you take someone at this pick or would you try and trade it?
So I'm like looking, if I'm Rob right now, I'm just like, what is the best I can get? I think to your point, right, it's easy in the abstract to say like, oh, we got to trade it and like try to use it to get an upgrade. Like, oh, package it with Rui, package it with Gabe, like get an upgrade. I think to your point, like the pick has relatively low value. I think for whatever, you know, I think this is a relatively weak draft up top though. And I think like there is still talent in like the range we're picking. It's just like what people kind of forget when people say it's a weak draft, they don't mean like 1 through 60, it's weak, right? They just mean usually there's like a clear kind of top 10 tier, and then there's like a next tier, and then a next tier. And then this year, it's just sort of like there's not a clear number one. And basically outside of the top three, people are like the like, you know, 4 through 20 is like you're getting kind of the same player. And so like if you're picking in the top 10, that's not what you want to hear. But if you're picking like 17, you might just be getting a guy who would be like 17 in any given draft. Right. So I think that's what people need to remember. But I, you know, ideally we would have just not had selected JHS and we wouldn't be in this mess. But, yeah, you know, there is a decent argument for like, you know, even like, let's say we didn't pick JHS. We pick like a unnamed point guard who's like a little bit better and has some trade value. There would be a, like a argument to just, I still think, to like reset that pick, trade it with Rui, try to get an upgrade, and then take a big man now, because like we don't need a point guard, we need like big men. So, you know, and especially like young big men, you know, I think kind of to your point, are like able to contribute earlier than young point guards usually. And that's like kind of what we need right now. But going back to the original question, I would try, see what's out there. I'm not like angsty about like, or anxious about trading it. But if there's not a guy there, I keep the pick and I you know, take a center and I try to get rid of JHS. That's sort of how I would approach it.
Yeah, that's how I would approach it too. And I also don't think a big time trade will materialize by the time the draft happens. And as you all know, once you make that pick, the already little value of the 2027 first round pick loses even more value, right? So,
right.
So yeah, the Lakers should just do their due diligence with regards to that pick. This draft in particular has a pretty good breadth of big man, which helps the Lakers out and kind of hopefully helps narrow down their choices for them, even though there are some other players at different positions who could also fit well at the number 17th pick. And I know people won't like this, including there are also some guards who might fit well at number 17. But for all intents and purposes, we are going to be focusing on the big men. So why don't we take it to break here? When we return, let's get into the specific names that we are eyeing for that number 17th first round pick.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, so we are back. Let's get into some of the big men in this year's draft who could be hovering around that, let's say, 14 to even 29, number 29 pick range that, you know, who knows what will happen once actual workouts occur. Guys may end up moving up and down. It sucks because last year, Derek Lively, before any of the combine or workout stuff happened, I believe he was hovering in the 17th to 25 range, right? So some of the guys that we're talking about here could initially be slotted right where we're at, but then eventually rise to as early as number 10, you know? Luckily, there are guys like Donovan Klingon and Alex Saar who will be the premier bigs in the top 10 range, but given how the playoffs have been playing out and everybody, you know, veering more towards like size once again, who knows, there may be a premium on just getting a big man, especially in a shallow draft like this one, you know?
So that's a good point. Yeah,
so let's talk about my first prospect, Khalil Ware from Indiana. He is 20 years old. He is 6'11.75 without shoes, so he's a 7-footer.
Yeah,
7'4" wingspan. He went to Oregon and then eventually transferred to Indiana. He wasn't teammates with JHS. This could be the Indiana Hoosiers redemption pick for us. But apparently, so a little bit of context behind him. Apparently, he is kind of lazy. And the reason why he transferred to Indiana from Oregon is because of some of his, I don't know, personality attributes, questionable personality attributes. I think he rebounded pretty well in Indiana, as evidenced by his 16 points, 10 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 1.9 blocks averages last season. He also shot 42% from three, hitting 17 of 40 from three, which is interesting. But yeah, Khalil Ware is, I think, this year's Derek Lively, potentially. He kind of fits that mold the easiest. He was number one at the combine in center standing vertical reach at 12'1". He's also one of the fastest centers in lane agility, fastest of the centers we're going to be talking about today. And I guess he also set a new aggregate high score for centers when it comes to overall physical testing at the combine. What you need to know is Khalil Ware is an athletic, explosive, mobile big with some shooting potential. But yeah, it's crazy to see this 7-footer with a 7'4" wingspan kind of move the way he does. At times he looks clunky because he's so long, but then other times he looks pretty fluid for a 7-footer. So your quick thoughts on Khalil Ware.
Yeah, Khalil Ware, I'm like excited about this athleticism. So it's so funny. Like, I guess I didn't pay attention really to college basketball this year, but I remember Khalil Ware at Oregon and remember thinking this guy is horrific. Like I remember watching him at some point and being like, this guy does not have it. I don't know who this guy is. And then all of a sudden you look at his stats from year one to year two and it's like night and day. I'm excited about his athleticism. I feel like, to your point, especially since he's shown some shooting upside, like he could be a guy who, you know, is initially, if you looked at the mock drafts and you know, April, May, like he's in our range, but he ends up rising to like closer to the top 10 by the time draft day comes around.
Yeah, he may follow that same Derek Lively trajectory. Now, the one thing about him that's... So here's the thing. As I mentioned, Derek Lively is probably the exception and not the rule. So he could be like Derek Lively, Tommy, or he could be like Willie Cauley-Stein. You know, and if you factor in some of the, you know, attitude, work ethic issues, maybe you're like, maybe he's a little bit more Willie Cauley-Stein. But with that said, it's hard to ignore the physical attributes and just how explosive he is when he hammers down these dunks with that wingspan of his. It's pretty powerful. And he does have he has some Christian Wood vibes to him a little, which is interesting. I've heard a Christian Wood comp to him, and I think that's where his shooting stroke comes into play, and he can handle the ball a little bit. Christian Wood, believe it or not, actually averaged 2.7 blocks in college his final year, so that's kind of interesting. But yeah, I would describe Khalil Ware as like a Derek Lively, new wage Tyson Chandler mashup with maybe Christian Wood's work ethic and sensibility. You know what I mean? So like Christian, you know, I think the shot selection and basketball IQ come heavily into play with Khalil Ware. Right. Where it's like,
yeah,
is he going to do the little things or is he going to be like Christian Wood and jack up shots that are unnecessary? Is he going to post up and try and do Rudy Gobert hook shots when that's not needed? You know, so that's the question with Khalil Ware. But again, it's hard to deny that athleticism in that type of body because he clearly can rebound the ball as well. Let's move on to my second prospect. Yves Missi, say Yves to the dress. He is out of Baylor, 20 years old. 6'10 without shoes, so he's essentially a 7-footer as well. 7'2" wingspan. He measured number 15th overall in max vert amongst all players with a 38.5-inch vertical. That's higher than Khalil Ware's 36-inch max vert. He was the highest in the 3/4 court sprint of all the centers we're talking about today, faster than even Khalil Ware, which is surprising. He only played 22 minutes at Baylor, but he did average 10.7 points, 5.6 rebounds, 1.5 blocks on 61% from the field. Yves Missi is a freaky athlete at that size. He's long, explosive. He's a lob threat. He does not shoot mid-range jump shots or threes. He doesn't really have an offensive game, but his floor and his foundation falls on defense. He's an absolute defensive menace who really chops his feet and knows how to use his long wingspan to really bother defenders. He absolutely put the clamps down on Kyle Filipowski during the college season. And he really just engulfs players. At first glance, his frame kind of reminds you a little of Mo Bamba because he's so like gangly and long, but he is nowhere near as awkward moving or clunky as Mo Bamba. He's actually very fluid. The way that he runs up and down the court is surprising. And again, just like his explosive athleticism is what stands out to you. And the biggest thing too, I think the thing that I'm realizing taught me out of all these prospects that you want to measure is their motor, right? And Yves Missi to me has got motor in all caps. So yeah, do you have any thoughts on Yves Missi?
Well, to your point there, I think the motor point is a really, really good point. And when I was a little kid, I remember my uncle like explained to me at some point, like my uncle who had just been watching basketball for probably 50 years at this point. But he like, you know, it was like, you never have to wonder whether a guy who's 6'1" like wants to be in the NBA. That person is like working their ass off and like is going to fight, you know, to the death to keep their spot. Sometimes guys 6'9" and up, you have to wonder a little bit. And so like motor, I think like we saw with GG Jackson, who had like a fantastic season, like how much, and it was like, by the way, thought of as being a complete project. Like, I don't know if it's going to work out, but his motor carried him. Right. And so like, if you can get a big guy and the big guy has a motor, and you don't have to worry about like, does this guy want to be here? Like, chances are it'll work out. And so I kind of like feel the same way that you do about Messi. It's like, it's a little bit more of a project. And like, you wonder, is this going to like be helpful at all in the LeBron AD era, or certainly like the rest of the LeBron era, I guess we could say. But it's interesting. And if like it turns out they meet with him and they think that he has the best motor of all the big guys, I would be totally in favor of making that pick.
Yeah, so Missi is kind of like, I liken him to like a Mitchell Robinson, or like a slightly shorter, less lankier DeAndre Jordan, because when he goes up for these poster jams, dude, it is ferocious and it's insane. You want to hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife. Like, when you can get the motor and the explosive athleticism and the way that guy runs up and down the court so fluidly in that type of body, I mean, that's huge. So yeah, I would also characterize him, because a lot of people can't get Mo Bamba out of their line of sight. And Mo Bamba's actually a really good player to point to with regards to motor or lack thereof, right? Because Mo Bamba physically is insane. He's like 7-footer with a 7'9" wingspan, but what he lacks is motor and kind of agility and mobility. And so Yves Missy is what I would characterize. He has Mo Bamba's frame, but with prime Clint Capella's motor and athleticism. Do you like that type of player, Tommy? Does that type of player sound good to you?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Perfect. Okay, so there's Yves Missy and Kalel Ware. Yves Missy also has shown a tendency to be able to put the ball on the floor and be competent in that respect, but I wouldn't expect too much from him. He's kind of like more of a Rudy Gobert type player. Let's move on to a more offensive-minded center, although he's kind of like a tweener 4/5. But let's talk about Daron Holmes II out of Dayton. He is 21 years old, 236 pounds. He was actually 220 pounds last year, so he actually bulked up. He's 6'9 without shoes, so 6'10, 6'11, 7'1 wingspan. He averaged 20 points, 8 rebounds, 2.6 assists, 2.1 blocks, 1 steal, 54% from the field, 38% from 3, hitting 32 of 83, which is a pretty good sample size and volume. His attributes include the fact, I mean, he's pretty much just a versatile athletic big who can score, block shots. He's a ferocious dunker. I really like his agility and fluidity out on the perimeter. He's a pretty mobile big. He can put the ball on the floor some. He's also a pretty decent short roll passer. Really solid outside shooter, as I outlined. So obviously he has potential as a floor spacer. And the best thing I love about him is he loves to take it to the rim and dunk. Comps for him that I've kind of come up with include, look, this the best case comp for him is probably Jaren Jackson Jr. He kind of shoots like JJJ as well. I've also heard of a Miles Turner comp for him. Kind of baseline would be Christian Woody and Bobby Portis, or maybe even a Naz Reid, right? Because he's kind of that prototypical tweener 4/5, but he might be the most, like, he might be the most well-rounded prospect out of all the bigs, maybe, even though he's not traditionally like the type of big that you'd want. Next to Anthony Davis, he's playing the four. But yeah, your thoughts on Daron Holmes?
So Daron Holmes is like my early favorite. He's certainly the guy that I would be looking at the closest. And I don't know, I guess, like, I agree with pretty much everything you said. And I guess my question back to you is, like, do you agree? In my mind, he is like the most NBA like plug and play ready right now.
I would say I think he has the highest ceiling because of his offensive versatility. I'm just not sure if, like, when you plug him into like a defensive specialist role, he can. Yeah, I'm unsure. I would say he probably has the highest ceiling if he can hit all of these markers that he hit in college with regards to being a 2.6 assist guy, being able to shoot 38% from three. But I'm wondering if that type of player has a steeper learning curve when he gets to the NBA, because he has to pull back on his offensive skills and tailor it down to, can you just do the dirty work things? Does that make sense?
That is totally fair. And I mean, look, I agree with that too. I just think that, like, you know, I guess, yeah, you're right. He has to show that he can continue to hit those metrics in the NBA. But if he can, like, if he can approach it, right, I just feel like it's hard to get a rookie minutes in the NBA if there is zero on offense. Even if it's like, okay, this is just our backup defensive big man. Like, I think the way you find minutes consistently as a young player is first through offense. Now, you know, I know it's like, oh, the Alex Caruso, Lou Dort, all that stuff, right? But like, that's like, you have to be like the elite of the elite defensively. I just think like anyone who can come in and hit an occasional three as a big man has a chance to get some minutes. And that's how like the development is going to happen. Because I guess like one fear that I have as we talk through all of this is like, this is all a moot point because none of these guys would get minutes on a team next year anyway, right? So I guess that's where I'm sort of thinking Holmes could have a potential fit. I like the fact that, like, you know, he's from Dayton and, you know, not like Kyle Filipowski, I'm from Duke, or, you know, it's just like, he maybe is going to come into the draft with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder compared to some of the other guys. And I don't know. He, to me, was my early favorite, pretty much for all the reasons you outlined.
Yeah, I think he's maybe the longer term project, but with more of the higher end dividends and upside. I feel like Ivez and even Kalel would probably be the easier plug and play immediately, just because you're like, hey, run the floor, clean up on the glass, block some shots. You know, that's all you have to do. Daron Holmes, you know. So
I agree with you. I just want to, like, Damian Jones, right? I mean, it's like there are guys like that who are like supreme athletes who you would think you could just plug and play because, okay, anybody can run and jump and grab some rebounds, maybe get a couple blocks. We're not going to throw you the ball at all. But like those guys often don't have immediate success too, right? Mm-hmm. I just don't want us to get too like everybody is Derek Lively and
sure,
you know, yeah.
Yeah, and I think too the positive with or the upside with Daron Holmes is yeah, he could stem the tide between LeBron James and Anthony Davis, right? If he really pops, then you kind of have your power forward of the future. And yeah, if he can approximate any sort of Jaren Jackson Jr., Miles Turner comp, then yeah, that would be amazing. And he could maybe even extend Anthony Davis's, you know, career a little bit. Okay, the last main guy that I want to talk about is the most famous player on this list. Everybody knows about Zach Edey from Purdue. 22 years old, 7'3.75 without shoes, so 7'5 in the NBA, with pretty much a 7'11 wingspan.
That's crazy. He's
299 pounds, essentially 300 pounds. Back-to-back Naismith Men's College Player of the Year. He won all six major National Player of the Year honors, becoming the first player in 50 years to win unanimous National Player of the Year accolades in consecutive seasons. Fun fact, his mom is Chinese and she is 6'3", kind of insane to think about. You'd think that she's Chinese, but you're like, oh, she's probably like, I don't know, 5'8". No, she's 6'3". That's why he's 7'5". Anyways, combine stuff. With regards to the combine, he actually performed much better than expected in all of the agility mobility drills. When it comes to the shuttle run, three-quarter sprint, all the agility tests, he actually beat out Donovan Clingan in all of them. He had a higher max vertical leap than former prospects like DeAndre Jordan and Rudy Gobert. A lot of this stuff you can't trust because apparently Cody Zeller is like one of the best players who ever measured out in the combine. But with that said, Zach Edey averaged 25 points, 12 rebounds, 2 assists, 2.2 blocks, 62% from the field, and 71% from the stripe this past college season. So look, his attributes are the fact that he is just 7'5". He is a true mountain of a screener, really erases guys on the offensive end. I'm sure he's going to be one of those very high screen assist guys in the NBA. He has a really wide dunk radius where you give it to him 4 feet out, and because he's so big, people are going to clear the way or he's just going to dunk over them. So he can dunk it from far out. His ability to alter shots, not just with regards to the getting blocks, goes without stating. He does have some shooting potential, actually. He showcased it at the combine where I think he shot 16 of 25 in one of the three-point drills. And when you look at his shot mechanics, you instantly think of Brook Lopez because of how slow the windup is, but how effective it is as well. But the thing that gives me confidence about the shooting potential with Zach Edey is the fact that he shot 71% from the stripe, and he's done that pretty consistently throughout his college career. But yeah, what are your thoughts on Zach Edey? He's probably the most polarizing prospect and polarizing big in this year's draft, just because everybody's trying to get away from the slow-footed big man who can't play in today's modern NBA with quick guards who like to shoot threes, come off screens. Can Zach Edey even come out from beyond 10 feet, you know, from above the paint and guard any of those actions? But yeah, for me, when you have such an outliery prospect like this, I think it's fine to take a shot because he's going to defy, again, because he's an outlier, he's going to defy all of these standard equations of like, he's a slow-footed big man, he probably can't play drop because he's not going to be able to lunge out, et cetera, et cetera. And for me, you're looking at, I don't know, again, a Brook Lopez, maybe a taller, longer if it's a Zubats. Worst case scenario, Tommy, is you have Timofey Mozgov, and I know people don't want to hear that name, but, you know, the Lakers could have used a Timofey Mozgov big who could just eat up space in the paint, grab some rebounds, and allow AD to play free safety on defense, you know? So, yeah, what are your thoughts on Zach Edey?
Zach Edey is, like, very, very interesting. You mentioned he's the most famous. He's certainly the one that, like, most of us have, like, feel like we have the most data points on. Just, like, if you've watched college basketball at all in the last 3 years, like, you're familiar with Zach Edey. So I think it's funny. All of those names that you mentioned as, like, comps, I think highlight the point that I'm about to make, which is, like, Zach Edey may not have the highest upside of the players who are going to get drafted, of all these big men that we've talked about, but it's just, like, so hard to imagine that somebody who checks all of the boxes I'm about to go through, like, won't have some level of success. Like, when you're drafting at 17, it's okay to take a guy who's not an all-star. Like, of course you want the max upside, but, like, if you get a guy who's just going to be an 8 to 10 year NBA player and have a solid career, that's not a bad outcome at 17 at all, right? A lot of people pick at 17 and the guy's out of the league in 4 years. So the thing about Zach Edey is, like, people get worried about his defense and people get, like, worried about his speed and sort of, like, a lot of these types of issues. I think, like, for me, if Enes Kanter, like, understanding that it was just, like, a different era, if Enes Kanter could be, like, a top five pick and have, like, a nice career, I see no reason why Zach Edey can't just, like, on offense alone, like, have a decent career. Like, I think, like, look, defensively, his issues are what they are. And, you know, I don't want to say he can't, like, continue to work on them, but you can scheme around it. You know, and like, teams do scheme around, like, you know, Gobert, for example. It's like, yes, he's an outlier in his own way because he's Defensive Player of the Year every year. But, like, Minnesota has figured out how to sort of scheme around the fact that he can't guard Steph Curry on the perimeter. So, like, my point is, teams will figure it out. And, you know, at minimum, you're getting, like, a guy who has the work ethic, a guy who has touch, a guy who has really good hands, a guy who has all, like, the physical attributes to succeed, a guy who at that size has already like a huge volume of data suggesting that, like, his body will not break down, which is a huge, huge, you know, factor for guys the size. A longer Ivica Zubac is not a bad outcome as, like, a number 17 pick. You know, a bigger, like, you know, Enes Kanter is not, like, a bad outcome as, like, a number 17 pick. So if Zach Edey is available, I don't know how much he, again, helps in, like, this very, very short term, like, LeBron AD window. I think he could help a little bit because he's NBA ready. But, you know, I think, like, yeah, I don't know. He's an interesting guy who could go anywhere from, it wouldn't surprise me if he went, like, 10. It wouldn't surprise me if he went, like, second round, to be honest with you.
And it wouldn't surprise me if he just ends up as, like, you know, a bench big like Timofey Mozgov, or he becomes one of the best centers we've ever seen, because you can't really ignore the outliery measurements of 7'11" wingspan, a 7'5" guy, and then the accolades that he's won. You know, that's not nothing, you know?
So. Yeah. And just, like, if you want any, you know, if you have any question about, like, is this guy going to work hard, I should say, and is he going to take this job seriously, like, look at his progression over his 4 years at Purdue and watch his interview after they won their first game in the tournament this year in the round of 64. For anyone who follows college basketball, Purdue was a one seed last year, got upset by a 16 seed, which obviously, like, never happens, right? And this year, as a one seed, they won their first game, and they interviewed Zach Edey after the game, asking him, like, you know, of course, the obvious question, like, how does it feel? And the way this guy responds to this question is, like, some cold-blooded stuff. Like, this dude is, like, he's, like, a gamer. He's going to, like, work hard, and he's going to take this very, very seriously. And I don't know. I think, to your point, it's, like, we can't try to just, like, draw comps to this guy because he's an outlier.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to go by. Yeah, I think it's important to look at his progression and the way that he's progressed every single step along the way in his career. Another comp that I have for him would be, this is a deep cut, it's a former LeBron James teammate, Tommy. He could be like LeBron's new Zydrunas Ilgauskas, who was 7'3". Yeah, exactly. I don't know if he'll have the, like, shooting touch that Zydrunas had, but Zydrunas was pretty slow, you know, but LeBron James found a way to work with him, even though they didn't do anything meaningful. But yeah, there is Zach Edey for you. That'll pretty much do it for our main bigs. There's also a Kyle Filipowski, who you mentioned earlier from Duke. He's 20 years old. It's pretty impressive that he's actually 6'11 without shoes, but he does have a 6'11 wingspan. And of the 77 players measured in the combine, Tommy, he is the only player with a negative wingspan to height differential. So he's like 6'11, but he's also 6'10.5 wingspan wise. Kyle Filipowski, very offensively versatile. He can shoot, space the floor, can block some shots, 16 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists. Reminds me of Zach Collins, a little bit of Kelly Olynyk, kind of Christian Woody as well. There are times when he shows off some nice shake from the perimeter off the dribble, which kind of surprises you. I've heard people say he kind of looks like Lauri Markkanen, and that would be a way, way, way high-end comp for him. He is sneakily athletic, and I don't want to use sneakily athletic because he's white, but it's sneakily because he doesn't always functionally use that athleticism, but when he's on the break and when he has space, he jams it down pretty hard, and I think he had a pretty nice vertical. There's Kyle Filipowski, and then lastly, there's also Adem Bona out of UCLA. He's 21 years old. He's the shortest player out of all of these guys. He's 6'8.25 without shoes, so 6'9", 6'10". But he does have a 7'4" wingspan and is 243 pounds. He is one of the most, if not the most, physically gifted explosive athletes in this draft class. He was number one in top standing vertical jump, number 8 overall in max vert with a 40-inch vertical, and he was number 2 at the combine in height to wingspan differential, being pretty much 6'8.25 without shoes and having a nearly 7'4" wingspan, which is insane. In just 26 minutes at UCLA, he averaged 12 points, 6 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, and 1.8 blocks. I have compared him to being the purely defensive version of Zion Williamson. Has a little bit of Draymond Green's physicality and mobility, plus the wingspan differential. Draymond Green is like 6'8 and short, but with really long arms. And maybe a little bit, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Ben Wallace as well. But yeah, he's a very kind of interesting player to watch because he's so quick. He's got the motor. Maybe he doesn't have the high basketball IQ yet, but he is like a little Tasmanian devil out there. But any parting thoughts on Filipowski or Adem Bona?
Filipowski, I mean, it's, I don't know. He's sort of I don't want to say this because it's like you never want to get burned by these types of comments. But these guys from Duke, it seems like, don't usually have a lot of success in the NBA for whatever reason. That sort of are of the mold that Filipowski kind of fits. Bona, I think, is a very interesting prospect. I think like that's like late second round if we keep our pick, slash maybe undrafted. I think I've seen for him, it would be an interesting project. And you know, if we're kind of giving up on Castleton, maybe we can give him a shot with a two-way contract.
I actually think he might rise to the first round, maybe late first, just because he had such a outstanding draft combine, and I'm sure he's going to kill it in workouts. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. My last question to you is, how would you give me your top three out of these bigs right now? I guess you kind of showed your hand a little bit earlier, but let's lay it out for the listeners once again. Your top three out of these bigs that we've talked about.
Daron Holmes, Edie, and probably Messi.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I will go number one, Messi. I just think for what the Lakers need around AD, straight motor, athleticism, length, clean up the glass work, running the floor work. Ivez can probably contribute now and later too, the more he develops without too much runway. Number two, Daron Holmes, for all of the things that we said, a very tantalizing prospect, could end up being the best all-around big out of this list. But he is more of a power forward tweener type, kind of like Rui, but more of a center. Number three, Khalil Ware. A lot of the same things I said about Messi, I say about Khalil. If he does well in his interviews and you're sure that he's going to work hard and all of that stuff, and he's not going to do stupid things like post up too much, take too many outside jump shots. Ivez seems a little more grounded in that respect, but Khalil and Messi are kind of the same molds of centers. And then I would go Zach Edey. I guess this would be top four. Yeah, I just think you have to take a chance on a guy like this. The accolades, the outlier physique. He could bomb, but he could also pay huge dividends. For me, the times when you can throw out your notions on what modern day NBA ball looks like and where the traditional big man fits into that space, the times when you can do that is when you find yourself with an outlier big man who's 7'5" with a 7'11" wingspan who defies categorizing. So I'll leave it there with Zach Edey. And yeah, with that said, that'll do it for our episode and our early look at the top big man in the Lakers range at number 17 in the 2024 NBA draft. And yeah, we will stay updated on the Lakers head coaching search and be back to talk about that if and when, or not if it happens, but when it happens, whether it's Coach Podcast or someone else. Ty Lue hasn't been signed yet, so you know, we'll see, crossing our fingers. And Mike Anori, who knows? Mike Anori may be the dark horse candidate who ends up winning this job. But yeah, with that said, that'll do it for this podcast episode. And Tommy, I will catch you later.
Peace.
Laters.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.